Happy Saturday, and thank you for joining me today. On November 9, 1945, President Harry S. Truman sent a letter to Congress calling for the creation of a nationwide health insurance fund that would be accessible to all Americans. And that plan that President Truman had, was that this new program would provide health coverage to all Americans for paying for regular visits to the dentist, the doctor, hospital visits, nursing, and laboratory visits. Ultimately, President Truman was not successful in creating this national health insurance program for millions of Americans, but 15 years later, a young senator from Massachusetts named John F. Kennedy ran for president, and he advocated for Medicare for All.
Senator from Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy, took up the challenge of the problems of older Americans and made health insurance for the elderly a major issue in his campaign for the presidency.
Well, the Medical Aid for the Aged bill has been introduced in the House of Representatives by Congressman Farrand, and I've introduced it in the United States Senate. The Farrand bill provides that those who are on Social Security, contributing to Social Security, shall make a contribution so that when they are 65 years of age and over if they're men, 62 if they're women, or if they're over 50, if they're totally disabled, they can receive assistance from the fund in paying their hospitalization, paying the cost of their examination and drugs, and also receiving some assistance in paying their general medical bills.
He went on to win that election in 1960, and then in 1962, President Kennedy gave this speech on Medicare for All and why it's essential that we should advocate for this.
The fact of the matter is that what we are now talking about doing, most of the countries of Europe did years ago. The British did it 30 years ago. We are behind every country pretty nearly in Europe in this matter of medical care for our citizens. And then those who say that this should be left to private effort. In those hospitals in New Jersey where the doctors said they wouldn't treat anyone who paid their hospital bills through Social Security, those hospitals and every other new hospital, the American people, all of us, contribute one half, one or two-thirds for every new hospital the national government. We pay 55% of all the research done. We help young men become doctors. We are concerned with the progress of this country. And those who say that what we are now talking about spoils our great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West, and in 1862, he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizenry and a progressive government is what has made this country great, and we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
Ultimately, President John F. Kennedy was unsuccessful in his advocacy for Medicare for All. Even if he had to say more on it, the nation, unfortunately, would never hear those words, because President Kennedy was assassinated in November of 1963. His success for Lyndon B. Johnson, although, then became president. And in 1964 was an election year, and so Lyndon B. Johnson was running for re-election as the 36th president of the United States, and he campaigned on Medicare for All. Here's one of his ads where he's essentially attacking one of his Democratic opponents in the race on his stance on health. Listen to this.
On September 1st, 1964, Senator Barry M. Goldwater interrupted his vacation cruise and headed for shore in a big hurry. Destination, Washington, D.C. He arrived just in time to cast his vote. No. Then he turned around and headed back. Senator Goldwater flew across the continent twice, almost 6,000 miles, to vote against a program of hospital insurance for older Americans. As he said in the Atlanta Constitution on January 26, 1963, I've got my own Medicare plan. I've got an intern or a son-in-law. Flip answers do not solve the problems of human beings. President Johnson wants a program of hospital insurance for older Americans. He is determined to see this program passed in the next Congress. Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home. So that's Lyndon Johnson's 1964 re-election ad. Vote for me, not this guy, totally not this guy. And no, there is no ultimately this time because President Johnson did it. President Lyndon B. Johnson, he did what President Harry S. Truman and what President John F. Kennedy advocated for. He got it and he celebrated the whole thing at the Harry S. Truman Library, giving credit to the former president of the United States who actually tried to advocate for this. Former presidents. I mean, President Harry S. Truman tried to do this. They called him a socialist. They said, oh no, that would never happen. President Kennedy tried this. He was ultimately unsuccessful. And then President Lyndon B. Johnson becomes president of the United States, and he is successful in his pitch for Medicare. And at that commemoration, former President Harry S. Truman and his wife Bess were there. Take a listen to this.
The Harry S. Truman Library at Independence, Missouri, is a scene of an historic event. President and Mrs. Johnson and Vice President Humphrey arrive for ceremonies that will make the Medicare bill a part of Social Security coverage. Mr. Johnson chose to sign the bill here as a tribute to former President Truman. The former president campaigned for Medicare 20 years ago, but it took 2 decades for his proposal to become law. The new bill expands the 30-year-old Social Security program to provide hospital care, nursing home care, home nursing service, and outpatient treatment for those over 65. Medicare will become law on July 1, 1966, and for Mr. Truman, an historic souvenir from the president. For Mr. Truman, the passage of Medicare is a dream come true.
That was July 30th, 1965, when President Lyndon B. Johnson essentially made Medicare law by signing it. President Truman and his wife Bess were issued the first Medicare card that during that remarkable ceremony. In 1965, the budget for Medicare was about $10 billion. In just the first year of Medicare becoming law in 1966, 19 million Americans had signed up for it. According to the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, 1 million Americans are registered for Medicare as of this year. KFF.org writes, quote, Medicare plays a key role in providing health and financial security to 60 million older people and younger people as well with disabilities. It covers many basic health services, including hospital stays, physician services, and prescription drugs, end quote. Now, there also is a clear distinction here. There is Medicare, and there also is Medicare for All. And Medicare for All is something that many people have been advocating for. As you heard just in this article, in this quote by KFF.org, quote, Medicare plays a key role in providing health insurance and financial security to 60 million older people and younger people with disabilities. Medicare for All is essentially advocating for Medicare for all Americans, regardless of disabilities. And during the coronavirus pandemic, that need has become more essential than ever. We are definitely not rounding the turn, as the president likes to continue to say. Coronavirus cases here in the United States are continuing to rise exponentially. And it's unfortunate to say, but states will unfortunately reach their second and third waves individually. And that is because of the great political divide that transpired this summer and politicizing the pandemic. We as a nation collectively could have gotten our epidemic under control, but states had to bid and compromise with other governors to see, who can get the most? Who can bid the most to get the most PPE? This week, the United States reached 8 million coronavirus cases. That means 8 million Americans now have a pre-existing condition. 8 million Americans now have a medical condition. 8 million Americans are now infected with COVID-19. Yesterday, Travis Dorman, a reporter for Knox News Sentinel, broke this astonishing story. He reports, quote, the headline of the article reads, quote, 17 dead in one of East Tennessee's deadliest nursing home COVID-19 outbreaks, end quote. 16 residents and one staff member have now died from the coronavirus at that nursing home. The executive director of the Heritage Center, Scott Hunt, said, quote, "We mourn the loss of these residents and associates. They were part of our family, and their passing has left a hole in our hearts." End quote. Travis Dorman continues, quote, "In addition to the staff member who died, 50 other staff members at this facility have been infected with COVID-19, have tested positive. 17 still were working from home on Friday, while 43 had recovered." End quote. As of yesterday, 834 nursing home residents had died across, and that reporting is according to the Tennessee Department of Health. That figure now accounts for 29% of the total COVID-19 deaths recorded in the state so far. We have also been reporting on the show about the dire concern right now in New Mexico as coronavirus cases are continuing to rise there exponentially. I reported just last weekend how the Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, is saying that she believes that New Mexico could become the new epicenter in the United States for the most confirmed coronavirus cases. Right now in New Mexico, ICU beds are expected to be full within weeks if the virus continues to spread rapidly as it's doing right now. According to Cobb 4 News, quote, "The state medical advisory team projects New Mexico hospitals could fill up quickly if the state doesn't slow the spread of COVID-19. According to the governor's press secretary, the team provided projects as Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham requested Friday. The team said if New Mexico sustains several consecutive days of 900 COVID-19 cases, ICU beds in New Mexico will be full within 3 to 4 weeks. The projections also anticipate ICU beds being full in 1 to 2 weeks if cases increase to 1,100 per day for several consecutive days. Hospitalizations have continually risen during the last surge in cases. As of Friday, New Mexico reported 168 people were hospitalized with COVID-19. The situation there is just absolutely dire. It's pivotal right now. Yesterday, New Mexico's virus surge claimed its youngest victim. According to the Albuquerque News Journal, quote, The governor's office on Friday reported 819 new coronavirus cases statewide, topping a three-day surge of record-breaking cases. We also have reports of people now holding weddings continually, despite the governor's order and despite the state's order banning mass gatherings, actually, because of the rising infections of COVID-19. Also, according to the Albuquerque News Journal, quote, "It also reported the youngest New Mexican to die from the illness caused by the novel coronavirus, a teenage girl from Eddy County, who was not said to have underlying health conditions or be hospitalized. The death was among six fatalities, included in Friday's count." Governor Grisham said, quote, "My prayers are with her family," end quote. This is what we are seeing right now all across the nation, and not just here in New Mexico, but cases are continuing to rise exponentially all over. And so as the president continues to say, we are rounding the corner. We are not rounding the corner. Cases are continuing to rise. And that misinformation, that mendacity, that apocryphal information it's wrong. It's also misleading. I mean, individual states right now are now reaching their second wave of coronavirus cases. Some individual states are also just now running out of ICU beds. Hospitalizations are continuing to rise exponentially. People are dying in nursing homes. We have COVID-19 outbreaks in schools. And we have absent federal leadership right now. Absent federal leadership. This week, Dr. Anthony Fauci said this. Take a listen.
If we don't change and make masks mostly universal in America, what are we facing this fall and winter?
I think we're facing a whole lot of trouble. And the reason I say that, I think you indicated in the lineup for the show. And that is we have a baseline of infections now that vary between 40 and 50,000 per day. That's a bad place to be when you're going into the cooler weather of the fall and the colder weather of the winter. In addition, we would like to see the percent positivity be coming down. And unfortunately, if you look at the states of the country, the Midwest, the Northwest, the states that you mentioned, including Iowa, instead of seeing it go in the other direction down, we're seeing an increase in test positivity. So you combine an increase in test positivity, which is always a predictor of more cases and ultimately more hospitalizations and ultimately more death.
Doctor, you're a trained scientist. Have there been times when you felt like, I just can't handle this? I know what's right. I'm telling people what's right. And then we're getting other messages that make no sense.
Well, that's a problem. There's no doubt about it. You can't run away from that. But that doesn't mean you give up. You've got to keep hammering out the correct public health message. If we do five fundamental things, universal wearing of masks, maintaining physical distance, avoiding congregate settings or crowds, as it were, doing things more outdoors as opposed to indoors, and washing hands frequently, those simple things, as simple as they sound, can certainly turn around the spikes that we see and can prevent new spikes from occurring.
Dr. Fauci has also been the main point this week. Unfortunately, the Trump campaign decided to put him in a political ad, essentially making people think that Dr. Fauci was endorsing Donald Trump for president, which was entirely not true. Dr. Fauci came out essentially opposing that he did not do that, and that he was put in that ad for political benefit from the president of the United States. But as we head into this new week where coronavirus cases are continuing to rise exponentially, as I opened up the show, there is an interesting thing here to consider for all Americans, not just individual Americans or one group of Americans individually, but this is something to consider for all Americans. It's called Medicare for All. Would more people be alive today if a Medicare for All Act was implemented? Would more people be alive today? What can we do to resolve this situation as our current healthcare system is failing us right now? What can we do? I have just the person to answer those questions, and that's next. Before we get to the interview, there are some things I'd like to elucidate. Number one, when I said that President Johnson attacked one of his Democratic opponents, that was not true. President Johnson was actually attacking one of his Republican opponents in the 1964 presidential elections. That was Arizona Republican Senator Barry Goldwater. Also, that interview clip that I played on the show, this is not really a clarification, but just give credit to. That interview clip that I played on the show with Dr. Anthony Fauci, he was speaking to Shepard Smith on CNBC News. But thank you. The interview is up ahead. On the MedicareForAllExplained.org website, it reads, quote, in 2006, before the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, and before Medicare for All came into common usage, I had to get health insurance for my family and myself on the open market. It cost about $825 per month for five people. The next year, 2007, we saw it rise to about $1,500 per month. In 2008, it rose to $2,400 per month. In 3 years, my premium had nearly tripled. I thought there had to be a better way. I started investigating healthcare, health policy, and health insurance. Medicare for All, or single payer, was barely on the radar. In spite of this, it became obvious to me in 2008 that single payer was the best way to solve the problems with our healthcare system. These problems include people without coverage, denial of claims, rescissions, high deductibles, and copays. Last summer, my wife and I were visiting my eldest daughter. She had some questions about why we need Medicare for All. After we were done, she said, "Dad, you did really good job explaining this. You should start a podcast." That is how I created this podcast. That is how this podcast is born. My guest and I will explain the benefits of Medicare for All and why it's better than our current healthcare system. Hopefully, I can live up to my high standard that I set with my daughter. The author of that article is Joe Sparks, and he joins me now. Joe Sparks is the host of the podcast Medicare for All Explained. Mr. Sparks, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
My first question is, could you explain the basics of Medicare for All and why it's essential?
Certainly. So Medicare for All is a single payer system. And what that means is that a government, our quasi-government agency, pays most medical costs and drug costs. And the example we have would be traditional Medicare. That is basically a single payer system. Before they started to try to ruin it with Medicare Advantage, where you use private health plans. We can talk about that a little bit if you'd like. But
go ahead.
And so the one thing that's very important to realize is that Medicare for All does not change the delivery of healthcare. It just changes how it's financed. So the delivery of healthcare will not change. It'll still be by your doctor. And as I'll talk about later, but one of the advantages of Medicare for All is you could go to any doctor or hospital. There will be no restrictive networks.
What exactly would a nationwide like Medicare plan, what would a nationwide Medicare plan do, and how would it benefit? How would we as citizens benefit from it?
Okay, well, there are two basic plans, one by Senator Sanders and one by Representative Jayapal. And we would benefit because one, it would cover everybody. Two, as I already mentioned, we could choose any doctor or hospital. And three, well, depending on the plan, but there's virtually no out-of-pocket costs, or sometimes called first dollar expenses. So when you go, you wouldn't have co-pays, you wouldn't have deductibles, and you wouldn't have co-insurance. So you could go to the doctor without having to worry about costs. Now, Representative Jayapal's plan totally gets rid of any co-pays, and Senator Sanders' plans just has co-pays for drugs, a maximum of $200 per year per person.
During the coronavirus pandemic, health insurance and Medicare has become more essential than ever right now. If we already had a nationwide health insurance coverage, do you believe that more people would still be alive today?
Definitely, for several reasons. One is people would not be worried about going to the doctor. And people put up healthcare costs, and there have been studies, I don't remember the numbers, but people say who fear they might get COVID are not going to the doctors or getting treated because of cost. The other thing that it would have allowed, since we have a for-profit system, hospitals did not have much extra supplies, particularly for extra beds or personal protective equipment, because it is not profitable to have that just sitting around. Well, with a Medicare for All system, you would look at that and say, hey, we need this in reserve. And one of the things that I hope we do in Medicare for All, and Representative Jayapal's plan does this, is something called global budgets, which the budget is set for the hospital. You look at what they need, and they don't bill. They just take care of it. It's like how a fire department works. When you call the fire department, they don't say, okay, well, we did this service, and this service. Here's your bill. You know, it's a public safety issue. And, you know, they just come out and take care of things because we use taxpayer money to support it. And that's what I think we need to do with healthcare. You know, a lot of people think that healthcare is a human right, and I agree with it, and there's no excuse, but I think just as strong an argument, and even better argument, is a matter of public safety, like the fire departments. And before we had public fire departments, it was wild. You know, what would happen is if your house was insured by a fire department, they would take care of it. But if it wasn't, there might be three or four fire departments that would come out because the houses around the house on fire would have coverage. And they were just there. They would let the house burn, but they were just there to make sure that the fire didn't spread. And if it spread to one of their houses, they would cover it. And just kind of as an interesting aside, the reason fire departments have dogs, they would go out they would send runners out to protect the fire hydrants so that they could get the money if a house was insured, and the dogs were there to protect the fire hydrants.
Mm.
So they weren't there to be nice. That's kind of interesting.
Yes. As you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic. 8 million Americans are now have now contracted the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Would Medicare cover the cost of a coronavirus treatment for Americans?
Well, will Medicare or Medicare for all?
Medicare for all.
Yeah, because it's different. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Medicare for all would, because we'd be covering everybody. And one of the things too, it would have helped with the data. When this first happened, the CDC was trying to get data about it. And we don't have integrated data systems for our hospitals or doctors. So they were literally calling the hospitals to say what they needed. And often it would be by fax. And one of the things we could do with Medicare for All is we could finally create an integrated data system to exchange data so that we could get this data automatically. It wouldn't be an issue.
Hmm. As I just said, 8 million Americans have now contracted the coronavirus, which means they now have a pre-existing condition. How pivotal is it that they now have access to Medicare for All?
Well, that remains to be seen given our current healthcare system, but I think it'd be very pivotal. First of all, the only place pre-existing conditions work or exist is in the United States. It's kind of an insurance term and an insurance fraud. Hmm. In other countries that have national health plans, you go to the United Kingdom or France or Denmark, they don't talk about pre-existing conditions. They talk about medical conditions.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter. You have this condition, it's treated. And as I think you know, one of the important things that the ACA did is it said that people could not be excluded for pre-existing conditions. And what's going on now, Republicans and the president are claiming they'll protect it, but right now they haven't produced a plan, and the Trump administration is in court trying to get rid of the ACA. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, the protections for pre-existing condition goes away. Mm-hmm. And then since a lot of states have expanded Medicaid, which is very important, of course, for poor people, that Medicaid expansion may go away. So you could literally have millions of people who lose insurance or can't get insurance. Under Medicare for All, it's not an issue. You have a problem, you're covered, you go to the doctor, and you know what you don't need to bring when you go to the doctor? Your wallet.
Mm. Wow. I mean, we have seen that occurring in other countries, and people have always been intrigued and wondering, why is it so difficult for people to have basic and essential access to healthcare here in the United States? Another one of my questions is, based on your research and your studies, is Medicare for All an affordable healthcare coverage plan for all Americans?
Well, let me rephrase the question in another way. Can we afford our current healthcare system? Hmm. And the answer is no. Look, we already have people who are skipping care because of cost. I think before the pandemic, roughly about 25% of people did that. We have medical costs that are driving people bankrupt. I talked to an economist, Gerald Friedman, who's been studying this for at least a decade and a half. Mm-hmm. We have people who are going out less, cutting short their vacations, all to pay their insurance premiums. Mm. And it's just ridiculous. So the question is not, can we afford Medicare for All? We can. The question is, can we afford our current healthcare system? And the answer is no. One economist that I talked to, who's an expert on the federal budget, said healthcare costs are what are going to caused the government to go broke. Well, then he said the government can't go broke. Mm-hmm. But even with Medicare and what the government now pays, healthcare costs would become so expensive that they will exclude everything else, our benefits will have to be cut severely. So, as I said, the question is not, can we afford Medicare for all? We can, and that would stabilize costs. The real question is, can we afford our current healthcare system? And the answer is not only no, but an emphatic no.
We have seen this sort of an infuriating part as all Americans are now just analyzing what health insurance companies are really, really doing for, which is just greed. So would, if Medicare, for say, a Medicare for All Act would to be implemented, would that infuriate the insurance companies and would they go out of business?
Well, the insurance companies are going to be infuriated if you put any regulations on them. But yes, it will infuriate them. Will they go out of business? I think most likely they will. Both Medicare for All Acts say that insurance cannot cover what Medicare for All covers. Mm. And it covers practically everything. Now, people will say it gets rid of health insurance companies. Well, technically, they're still legal for things that are not covered. But from a practical standpoint, they really wouldn't have that much to cover. Mm. So about the only thing that Medicare for All doesn't cover is elective cosmetic surgery, but that wouldn't be covered by insurance because insurance is for random events that can happen. But if it's elective surgery like that, you choose to do it. So, So insurance, yeah, I think for the most part, they'll be greatly reduced. But you have to remember something. So the average insurance policy for a family for employee-sponsored insurance is now a little over $21,000. And the employee pays about close to $6,000. And the insurance company, not the insurance company, the employer pays the rest. But mm-hmm. that premium, $21,000, when you look at per capita costs, would cover 4 to 5 patients in other countries when you look at their per capita costs. So for example, in England, I think that would cover a little over 3 people. I'm sorry, in England it would cover about 4.5 people. And in Canada, that would cover almost 4 people. And when you look at it that way, so think about it. With our current insurance system, for, you know, say you pay $21,000 and then in other countries that would cover, you know, 3 to 4 people or 3 to 5 people. And then you still, after paying all that, you still can have a deductible and a copay and possibly coinsurance. And to make matters even worse, the copays don't apply to your deductible. Hmm. And some of those copays are really expensive. I mean, some ER copays are now up to, you know, over $1,000. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't go to the deductible that you may have. So it's just a total waste of money.
Absolutely. I think I'm losing your mic here. Hold on.
Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Another one of the questions that I had is, since our current healthcare system is obviously not working and not benefiting Americans as much as it should be, when can we, I know there's been lots of advocacy for like Medicare for All, but when can we push this even harder? When can we get legislative action for this to be passed and to benefit all Americans?
Well, that's a good question. So as you know, Joe Biden doesn't support Medicare for All. Hmm. So assuming he wins, and it looks like he will, there's going to be a strong push to try to convince him that we need Medicare for All. Now, the good news is that Biden has supports getting everybody covered. And quite frankly, our health insurance system is broken, and there's no way that we're going to cover everybody if we keep a variant of our current healthcare system. In fact, I wrote a blog piece about that back in 2014, where the ACA was looking successful. And I said, well, don't celebrate yet. I mean, it's done good, but we have systemic problems in our current healthcare system and the ACA cannot fix them. Hmm. So, you know, what I'd like to say though, if people ask me, is it a good thing that the ACA passed? Yes, because it helped a lot of people, and a lot of people got insurance or got health coverage that wouldn't have. So mm-hmm. we're definitely better off with the ACA than without it, but we need to really take care of people. And the way we need to do that is by going to the next step, which is Medicare for All.
Why is it difficult for minorities to access healthcare in this country?
Well, yeah, I'm not an expert, but I would say two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is it's expensive. And, you know, in this country, generally, minorities are not as well off as white people. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is the systemic racism that occurs in healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, part of it is sometimes, like also have with women, but minorities aren't taken as seriously, or they'll say, oh, that problem is genetic, mm-hmm. when whether it is or not, they're not treated as vigorously as, say, a white person would be. So let me just add one more comment. You know, I've talked to people and they feel we need Medicare for All to address the systemic racism in our system. And they feel it's a necessary step, but Medicare for All in and of itself is not going to change, is not going to solve some of the racism in our healthcare system. Hmm. You know, one thing it'll do is it'll allow anybody to get care when they need it. And that's important. But for example, a lot of poor areas have what are called healthcare deserts. They don't have hospitals, they don't have doctors. Well, one thing Medicare for All would do is we could put the resources where they're needed. Hmm. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, but if we start committed to that, we can, you know, make a serious dent in the problem, say within 5 years. Now, and also we can start looking at doctors' attitudes and looking at what we can do with, because we'll be able to get better data to actually say, hey, let's work on changing these doctors' attitudes if we notice a problem.
Once again, my guest is Joe Sparks. He's the host of the Medicare for All Explained podcast. Mr. Sparks, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's an honor.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi.
At a time when we're asked to sacrifice, we step up to do our part. On the home front, on the front lines, to lend a helping hand and hold each other up, we are resilient, vigilant, and we'll get through this because we're better together, even if we're a little farther apart.
Welcome back. As you know, there's lots to get to this week. The news this week has just been breaking expeditiously. So therefore, I will provide you more segments on the Jeremiah Patterson Show for tomorrow, where I'll be conducting two interviews. So be with me for that on the Jeremiah Patterson Show this Sunday. But thank you again for listening to this episode. Have a great day, and I'll see you this Sunday.